The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show sponsored by AIB. Conan and Keane are here as usual. Lads, I want to start off the show by talking about Brendan O'Sullivan. Right, I want to read a line out of the statement, and this is the Kerry statement that came out yesterday, and it said, "The subsequent findings of Sport Ireland accepted that the rule violation was not intentional," right, not intentional, "and that the resultant suspension has been served." So the Irish Sports Council saw a substance in his urine. It was urine back then. There's blood now this year. It was after the league final last year. It was on the banned list. There's how many different substances are on the banned list, Keane? You get a little leaflet, don't you? Like, there's loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of very long words.
A lot of long words. And, like, I mean, you could take a cough medicine, right? And players need to be aware about this. There's no doubt about that. But one tiny little ingredient in that cough medicine might be on the banned list. So to get a blast off that one banned substance within that cough medicine or spoon, you might need to drink a gallon of that cough medicine to actually get, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so, like,
yeah.
I mean, there's loads of different ways of looking at this, and this is my point when I look at this kind of stuff. There's cheating, and nobody wants cheating, and nobody wants to be talked about being naive and thinking that nothing goes on. I've been immersed in GAA dressing rooms all my life in some way or another. There's no culture of cheating in the GAA that I was ever aware of. There's just not. There's no history of cheating in the GAA. I see a lot of this narrative that's coming from other sports like cycling and athletics. Sports that have decades and decades and decades of cheating culture. It's not just individuals cheating. It's teams cheating. It's countries like Russia, state-sponsored cheating.
Yeah.
It's different athletes getting popped all the time because they know other athletes are cheating, so that they have to turn around and go, "I'm going to cheat too, or else I'm not on a level playing field." That is that culture of those sports. They're dirty, dirty sports that have this serious problem. And the journalists that cover those sports are doing good work trying to expose these cheats and try to create a narrative around it so that they don't get away with it. Now, I think they're pissing against the wind, personally, because you can't stop it. It's just endemic in those sports. Cyclists used to die taking ease and speed in the 70s, going up mountains on bikes. They used to die trying to cheat, right? So this is the kind of sports that you're dealing with. And when they're not dying, and when they're not pumping their veins full of EPO and clotting their blood to such an extent that they die, they're putting motors in bikes. And then you have Festina affair, then you have the Lance Armstrong who bullied other cyclists into cheating, and you have teams who bully poor cyclists. This is the culture of those sports, and athletics is the same thing. So now that narrative, and it's a fashionable narrative, I think, now, you hear it on different shows all the time. They're always trying to catch these as Mo Farah is the latest one, Chris Froome. And it's a big soap opera, and we're always trying to find them, and that's grand. I've no interest in them, but that's fair enough, that narrative. So then something happens in a GAA to a GAA player who gets caught. Not intentional. I want to repeat that again. That's how the Irish Sports Council found this. Not intentional. Makes a mistake, most likely. We'll find out soon what happened. So now this narrative from these other filthy sports has been brought over into GAA, and, oh, well, you're naive if you don't think that's going... Well, like, how am I naive? You're naive to think it is going on, buddy. I've only spent all my life in GAA dressing rooms. I think you're naive to think that there's lads doping. There's no evidence of doping in GAA. There's no performance-enhancing drugs here. There's no evidence of steroid abuse. There's no evidence of EPO. There's no history of this. There's 14 years this bloody thing is going on of these drug testing, and there's been, this is the third one. Aidan O'Matney was done for using an inhaler. Like, that's not even worth talking about. The chap from Monaghan, Thomas Connolly, was suspended for 2 years after testing positive for a banned substance, Stanzanol. Now, that sounded a bit suspect for me, but this lad was not even on the Monaghan panel. He was in for a training kind of panel. So where's the evidence to suggest this is such a big deal in GAA? Well, just before I finish here, here's this poor Brendan O'Sullivan, right? Here's the headlines that were being featured on this poor chap who made a mistake. as far as I'm concerned. Unintentional. It's what the Irish Sports Council accepted was unintentional. We're not talking about history of abuse, history of these things happening where we have to drag Brendan O'Sullivan's name and have to question his word is wrong. Oh, you're naive if you believe him. No, I think that's completely wrong. RTE went with the headline, Kerry confirmed county footballer failed doping test after 2016 league final. So if you want to go black or white, yes, he failed a doping test. But did he use performance enhancing drugs? Someone who used PEDs, steroids, anything to juice themselves up, they would also fail a doping test. So Brendan O'Sullivan has been thrown into the same category as a cheat because he unintentionally was stupid, and these things can happen. Stupid players can do stupid things if they're not educated right. So then, independent, why is it being kept a secret for so long? More questions than answers after Brendan O'Sullivan's ban. Because all these lads want to jump on this same bandwagon of, oh, let's be great journalists and get to the bottom of this. This is what good journalists do. They try to get to the bottom of these because there's a cover up here and I know there's a cover. Nonsense. The Irish Times went with Kerry confirmed Brendan O'Sullivan failed a drugs test. Again, Sports Show, a website not very far from here, went with Kerry GEA confirmed players failed drug test after 2016 league final. The 42.ie, Kerry statement confirms player failed drug test after 2016 league final. Only the Irish Examiner, a piece John Fogarty wrote, and their headline was, O'Sullivan says contaminated supplement caused positive test. So the only one that might have made you think, Jesus, poor old Brendan O'Sullivan might have, you know, might not be as guilty as all the other headlines are screaming. And like, I mean, why is there such an appetite to hang, draw and quarter someone for failing a drugs test when it could be completely innocent, non-performance enhancing related?
Wow.
Yeah, well, well done.
Is that the Irish thing?
I think, look, there's a perception out there, and that's why people kind of, I suppose at times, particularly players, do have a distrust of media outlets in general, because if when you read a headline, sometimes, you know, the story that backs up the headline doesn't tie in with the bloody headline. And it's very, very disappointing for Brendan O'Sullivan to see those headlines about him, and just in general for any of his teammates, for any Kerry football followers, and just GAA people in general to see something like that, because it doesn't tell the whole story. And you're totally correct in that there is no culture of it in the GAA. In my experience, like I, much like you, I'm playing it my whole life. I've been involved in college teams, county teams, club teams, you know, interprovincial setups. It has never existed, to my mind. It's not a serious issue. Now, when you have brought in the serious strength and conditioning programs over the last number of years, over to say the last decade, I mean, that's maybe where people are taking supplements, you know, there's protein shakes and stuff like this after training or whatever it is, recovery shakes. Like it's that sort of stuff that tends to cause this as an issue, because if people are just generally having their balanced diet or whatever their food intake would ordinarily be outside of that sort of stuff, there's still a risk, actually, but it's a very, very limited risk. And what you're looking at then is, you know, a guy takes a Lemsip, and I think for a while, like, I think I'm nearly sure that if you were taking a couple of Lemsip the week of a game, you could potentially
You have to be very aware. And in my experience on the Leash panel when this came in, players were terrified.
Oh, you would players, be absolutely terrified, because
they'd be texting each other, they'd be saying, "Can I take this?" They'd be ringing the doctor. There's actually a culture of not wanting to cheat. Never mind cheating.
Yeah, well, you would actually not take stuff that you should take in normal life, like in normal medicine. You'd be thinking, "Geez, I'm not taking that. What if this causes this? What if this causes that?" Like, because the last thing any player would want is, you know, there's serious reputational damage caused by those sorts of headlines.
Lose your job.
Like, yeah, you could.
I made the point yesterday.
It's not even
Twitter.
That you could, but it affects you going forward. Like, it's not just what you're doing currently. It's, you know, these stories are always there. They're on the internet. Like, they never go away for somebody. And it's a very, very hard thing to take. And I think you have to draw the distinction between professional athletes who are taking PEDs for the benefit of their income.
For cheating.
Because it's of benefit to them. Because they see, right, if I do this and I get up a level here, there's potentially hundreds of thousands of euro or millions at stake for me here.
Yeah. And another thing on that, Cian, quickly, is that not only that, you look at motives. In any court case, you look for motive. And that's a huge motive
to do it.
Also a motive to do it is the filthy, dirty sports they're involved in and knowing. If I was an athlete in a 100-metre sprint and I knew everyone else was juicing up, I'd juice up. I don't want to be left out in the cold. Like, I want to be taking what they're taking to make it a level playing field. There's another motivation.
Well, exactly, and that's what it goes down to. It is the culture of the sport. If there was a culture in GAA in, you know, of this stuff happening, then it would inevitably happen widespread. Now, the culture is not there, thankfully, and look, that's the way we all want to keep it. So that's why you would always welcome the testing procedures. But I mean, I think it was actually decent that this wasn't exposed, that this occurred a year ago and nobody heard about it. And the player, in fairness, has, you know, served his ban, which, you know, even to be banned from your sport for a year, and I know the wording of it is strict liability, you know, for what goes into your body, but it's very, very difficult for an amateur athlete who, you know, as the verdict says, you know, an unintentional violation. Like, it's very, very hard for a guy to be, you know, taken away from your sport for a year because of this. So it's a very strict punishment. And
very strict punishment.
You welcome the testing because it does ensure that, you know, at least from one perspective, you'd say, well, despite the fact it was unintentional, the system is working and that somebody was caught. So that would give you comfort to say, well, look, it's not happening. People are being tested. You know, even though this was a specific example of an unintentional case, at least somebody was caught. So it gives you comfort that, you know, the sport is clean. Even though we kind of already know it is, to be honest. If you're involved in it, you know it's clean. It is sensationalism of the highest caliber.
It's a desire to get on the band. It's a desire to be a brilliant journalist that's getting to the bottom of this kind of doping thing that, like, other journalists. I'm convinced of that. I was called naive and all sorts of names for saying, this is incredibly harsh on this fella. I reckon the reason it was kept secret for so long is because they wanted to protect the poor chap because he unintentionally did it. I don't think his name should ever gone out in the public sphere. I think your name should go out in the public sphere if you're doing performance enhancing drugs and you're caught. You're caught cheating. The evidence here and what's in the statement is this fellow was not caught cheating. He was stupid. He unintentionally did it, which is a completely different ballgame. These things should be kept under wraps. Well, I would prefer if this wasn't even reported.
Well, I think it was.
He served his ban.
I would agree. And I think it was, I think the wording was a contaminated product. So, I mean, like, it's very hard for somebody, like, as we know, I mean, oftentimes you'd see if guys are taken, because we would have been through this, like, if you're being given, say, a protein shake or a recovery drink after training or after a gym session, you know, that on the batches of these things, they have them that they're being made in certain, you know, in the same factories as other products. And there's all the wording that, there can be stuff in them. Mm. So, like, people are very, very aware of this and always make every attempt. Certainly team doctors and strength and conditioning coaches that are involved in this with teams are always trying to make sure that they're going to the optimum places with all the certified stuff. Like, there's nobody taking any chances. So it's very, very unfortunate for them.
I have 3 points on this, though. Like, you're right. I don't think it is black and white. I think it's a very grey area, because I went onto the WADA prohibited list today and there are banned substances that, quote, subject to threshold limits. Like, that doesn't help. So you can take some of these substances for a while, but then you can't. Like what you're saying, Cian, people are so terrified of taking too much of it. That definitely does not help. But I think, you know, I feel a lot of sympathy for Brendan O'Sullivan, because nobody even knows the story, but his name
we'll
is smeared
soon,
everywhere.
Yeah, we'll know soon, yeah.
But I don't think leaving it a year has helped, because if they had just came out a year ago and said, like, they didn't need to name Brendan O'Sullivan, they could have just said, this fella has failed the drugs test or whatever you want to call it, and this is why. Did he use?
Common for who? Like, I don't care.
So like, it doesn't happen again. So, like, I don't go out and take this.
But the testers have a job to do, right? And they do their job. And a player serves the punishment of the suspension or whatever it is. I mean, I don't see how the public at large are entitled to the knowledge of that. I mean,
I don't either. I think I don't even narrow it down to a county. I don't think it's a GA player has failed a drugs test. He served his suspension. It was unintentional. That's not news. If this is a case where he's taking performance enhancing drugs, name and shame him, because nobody wants
but he did. Like, he might have done it. He did, but he did it unintentionally. So, like, you could have a case, and I know we won't, but you could have a case theoretically where 100 lads end up taking the same substance and say, didn't know it was there. When that
time comes, Conor, again.
But that's why they should come out and say, do not take this. We've told you now, don't take this product.
Oh, yeah, so leave the subject. I'm saying don't name the player.
I'm saying that too. I'm saying they should have said a year ago, this is the product that got a player they feel
it's perfect. I'll accept that if that's the point. Yeah, name the product and name what happened to him. But if it was contaminated, then maybe he didn't. Like, you know, if this was an unintentional contamination, then it's not something that would be, you know, regularly taken, you know, and how much performance enhancing elements were in it is another thing. Just on this, lads, I want to talk about Paul Kimmage, because he was on the he was on Off the Ball yesterday, and I wouldn't say he was called an Off the Ball. He was on the newspaper review, and this story just happened to break. But Paul is coming from that cycling, filthy, disgusting sport, in my opinion, what cycling is. And he's competed in cycling, and he's just, it's been his life's work, and he's done some great work in cycling, and you'd have a lot of respect for what he's done. And I've met Paul on a couple of occasions, and I like him. But he says yesterday, and it's gas, and I always talk about the doping brigade, and he's the Pied Piper of the doping brigade, because everyone's doping in Paul Kimmage's mind. But he talked to Joe Malloy yesterday, and I was reading these quotes, and he says, "I'm more interested, Joe, in the reaction to these stories than anything else. I think it's quite important how the GAA community reacts to this. We've had knee-jerk defence. This is an outrage. An amateur player. Why should this be an issue at all? He's been exonerated, etc. We don't know the full details of this were." Right? So there's a bit of outrage about it, defending the sport. I 100% defended the sport when I read that it was an unintentional thing. I think Brendan O'Sullivan doesn't deserve that media attention in his private life. I think if it was a mistake, keep his name out of it. But it was funny because Paul Kimmage tried to do the same thing, or tried to come into rugby, and he tried to say there was kind of, you know, suspicions about rugby, and it was all based on the size of the players. So, like, because the players have gotten bigger, there must be something going on. And this was under "A Dangerous Obsession with Size Creates Bigger or Need for Answers" was a piece that he wrote in the Irish Independent. But this is very funny. He talked about, I think he was on Matt Cooper saying this. So he says, "I had one text from someone within the rugby community here saying, this is a time bomb. For me, the killer is silence. I've heard this silence before. I'm asking the question. I'm asking the people who love the sport to debate what is obvious to anyone who looks at it now. We need to have a debate. So far, all we're hearing is silence." So there's actually no reaction that will satisfy Paul Kimmage. If there's silence, and he was tagging, remember him tagging Off the Ball and second captain saying, "Where are all the young brave journalists gone?" at the time, trying to get us all into this rugby. There's a problem with rugby. There was no evidence in rugby either, especially not in Irish rugby. Absolutely none. Zero. So when they found no evidence, they tried to say painkilling injections was doping, which is just like a bizarre kind of take to have on it. So if you come back fighting, defending your sport, he's very interested in that reaction. If you say nothing and just ignore Paul Kimmage, he's also very interested in that reaction. So, like, I mean, what are you supposed to do to satisfy Paul Kimmage, who is the Pied Piper of the doping brigade?
Yeah, well, I don't think anybody's under any obligation to try and satisfy him, and nor should anybody be attempting to satisfy him, because... Look, I can understand where he's coming from, and it is, you are kind of conditioned by the environment that you experience. So, you know, he has gone through a hard road with cycling, and he suffered an awful lot of grief and hardship, you know, in relation to doping and the topic, and as you point out, has done miraculous work. But I can totally understand, he's predisposed at this point in time to view things with a very, very sceptical
mind. Very sceptical mind. Because of the history of the sports he's involved with. GAA doesn't have that history. You can't paint it with the same brush.
No, you can't paint it with the same brush. Now, I do feel that he is entitled, and it is correct to question things and to search for answers. I mean, there's no problem with that. And when something like this occurs, look, there is a knee-jerk reaction sometimes from people without even looking at the circumstances of a particular case. It's all, oh, there's no drugs in GAA. There's not. Now, what we're looking at here is a very, very specific case where the ruling on the subject has noted that it was unintentional.
Yeah. And we've three and 14 years with no history.
Yes, exactly. So, you're talking about there's a substantial amount of testing done in the GAA.
I myself
was tested twice, which is miraculous, because if anybody was picking me out of a crowd to drug test me, it certainly wasn't for my endurance or anything like that. So
no, it's random.
I think I was tested twice in the same season. And
For your whole career?
Yeah.
That's not substantial, though.
But someone's always tested, though, Conan. We were tested
at training as well, and there was different guys pulled out of the... It's just completely random. And I asked the tester at the time, I was saying, like, what is the story here? Like, how... We were after losing an All-Ireland semi-final, and I was stuck there for an hour with this fella following you around. So I was asking the question, saying, like, why in the name of God is this me again? Like, and he says, look, it's totally random. He said that it occurred with one of the rugby players where they had tested him twice in the same season. And what they actually did was, the next next time around, because he was going mad about it, he said, you know, you're targeting me. They said, right, here's the names in the hat, pick out the name, and he picked out his own name. So
classic. Conan, get in here.
Sorry, I'm just looking at just a stat though from the Irish Anti-Doping Agency. In 2015, they only tested 97 times in GA. Now, there are over 2,000 clubs, so are we a little bit naive
to say... Well, no, that's inter-county.
It's inter-county only.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm saying, are we naive to say that, you know, I'm not saying there is a culture or a history or anything like that in the GA, but you can't, especially when you can get them so easily over the counter in different supplements, you can't say that no one's
taking. But you also can't say that there is. See, this is the argument. You also can't say that there is.
But then when something comes up, maybe we shouldn't be so quick just to say, nonsense doesn't happen here.
Nonsense. It's nonsense because it's not. There's no evidence of it. And there's never been evidence of it. And we have anecdotal evidence of being involved at club level and in squads all our lives, have friends that have been from other counties. And people tell me stuff like that. Like, it's not like I've been the most, like, you know, straight-laced player to ever play. I know what's going on among squads. Just let me finish on Paul Kimmage, because here's his kind of, I think this is him summing up. So what's going on here, he says. The problem, this is my problem now, is transparency. What really gets me is a sense that this is being managed rather than addressed. Now, this being the drugs problem in the GA is being managed. Like, a drugs problem, I'm saying a drugs problem, 3 in 14 years with no history whatsoever, and one is a bloody inhaler, Aidan O'Matney, right? Then we have this, which is unintentional. So now he's saying that this is being managed rather than addressed. So this is immediately painting the picture. There's a problem that's being managed and not addressed. Someone tell me what the problem is, because I'm not understanding it.
It took a year to get it out there.
Hang on. And that's the danger for the GEA if they want to start going down that road. So immediately there's this narrative that if this was Bradley Wiggins, right, and he says he unintentionally took this, I wouldn't believe him. Absolutely not would I believe him, because of the culture and the history involved in that sport. I would not believe him.
But
no
also,
way.
It's his job to know. It's his job to know. This is his profession. It's his job to know what goes into his body and what doesn't go into his body.
Yeah, no, that's true. But what I'm saying is, why is this being managed rather than addressed? What's being addressed? Someone tell me what's being addressed here or managed, or is there an issue being created here that's not there? That's the question I have.
I think that it goes back to leaving it a year. Like, I know it's unintentional.
I think it was to protect the player, Conan, and I think they're right to
perhaps
do that.
But they could have done it without naming him, maybe. And then it creates suspicion. And then what you said earlier, that suspicion then causes a culture, what we have in all our sports, where people are thinking, if he's taking it, I'm going to take it. And then all of a sudden it gets away from me. Now, I don't even know if I agree, though, with the professionalism and amateur thing. Like, because we mentioned motive, like, okay, you don't have a motivation to get more money by cheating, but you have a motivation to win. Bodybuilders have a motivation just to get bigger and look better.
You're one of 30 though, Conan, right? If you want to dope, I'll tell you, this is the way. And the culture within the GAA of not wanting to cheat, and I know that's there because I've seen it, the fear of it. Imagine being in doing your one rep maxes and your weights, and you're all pushing it out, and you're all working, training really hard, killing yourself, and you find out one of these little dickheads in the corner is juicing up, and he's actually, you know, blindsiding all of ye. The squad would absolutely come down on him like a ton of bricks. They'd be like, what are you playing at? You'd be thrown off the squad. You don't want people like that involved. So it's not an individual choice in a team sport. You're letting 30 of your brothers, and everyone knows now it's the band of brothers, you're in it together. There's a much less motivation to cheat within that group, that tight-knit group, than there is in an individual sport in a cheating environment.
I completely agree, and I'm not saying for 1 minute that it would be any team, like with 30 of them would be that would never happen, but there will be individual cases, and a lot of it will be unintentional.
But there hasn't been, though. In 14 years there's been 3, and one was a ventilator inhaler.
There's been 2 in the last couple of years, you know, that we know of at county level.
But what do you mean that we know of? The Irish Sports Council has to publish it. So there's been two
failed drug tests that we know of in the last couple of years.
Yeah,
in
the last 14 years since it came in. Like, it has happened in the last 2 years, but it's also in the last 14 years. There's no evidence to suggest, and they're both being reduced suspensions because they weren't ruled as intentional. So, like, I just rather see some more evidence before, and I'd be the first one to jump on this and say it's unacceptable. If you give us a little, there has to be more than this to start this narrative. Here's Aidan O'Rourke tweeting, before we move on from this. Without thinking about specific cases, I'm amazed how quickly GA people jump to the presumption of innocence around drug tests of our own. Grand, Aidan, that's fine. If that's your opinion, some people might agree with you, others might not. Then Kieran Cunningham from The Star replies back to him, and he says, when you see stories like this, scales should fall from eyes. And he links to an article of 2 million worth of anabolic steroids seized in Donegal. Major investigation underway. Like, imagine linking that to what's after happening here. Like, I mean, is that not scaremongering of the highest order? Like, I mean, I can't understand. And then Aidan O'Rourke comes back and says, potential returns may be too hard to ignore for some, irrespective of risk, particularly for those trying to make improvements to reach county panels. Again, that all makes sense. If we start seeing four or five different lads being popped for these bloody anabolic steroids, like, I'll completely say this has a huge... We're all not innocent. But this is not happening. So why are we creating this a doomsday scenario about 2 million worth of anabolic steroids seized in Donegal for the juice heads in the gym? And like, was it clearly big money? And we're trying to link this to what's after happening to a poor chap down in Kerry who's had an unintentional bloody drugs.
It's a bit of a stretch, all right. it's a fair stretch. And I, to be honest with you, when I saw that, I thought he was actually just taking the piss. To be honest,
maybe he was. I think he was.
I think he was. In fairness, because it is a bit of a stretch. Look, we can't sit here and categorically state that there's nobody taking drugs, and you know, I'm sure it is happening. You know, I'm sure there are individuals who will be acting the clown in clubs around the place or on county panels. The confidence I would have is that they will be rooted out and they will be caught, which is a good thing. But there's a very big difference, as you correctly point out, between somebody who intentionally does something and is, you know, taking products with a goal in mind, and somebody who has, for whatever reason, you know, had something in their system that was clearly ruled as being unintentional from a contaminated product. They are two totally different things. Now, we can't be, you know, as a GAA community, it's not right to just dismiss things out of hand. But from my experience personally, I have never encountered it. Never encountered it. I've never even heard lads talking about it.
Yeah.
And look, no matter what, you're always involved in all sorts of discussions around football and everything like that, and it has never ever arisen as a topic.
No, and I would second that, and Conan, I'm sure you would third that of talk about this kind of thing at club level.
Oh, I've never experienced it.
Them boys up the north are always, they're always looking for
Tyrone are at it, they're rife.
If it's going to start anywhere, it'll start up there, and we'll like the Puke football did. And just,
well, we're very innocent in Leinster, you know, we play this innocent football and we're all innocent behind the scenes, so maybe one day.
But listen, we've done 25 minutes there, but I think this needs to be pointed out, because let's not have, I actually just wanted, just before we finish up on that, because I have it in my notes here, the 42.ie did a freedom of information request on teams around the country, and they found that five teams had been fined for not showing up to, for not being at the place of training where the drug tester showed up to. So you get fined from that. And I remember that happening a couple of times with Leash. And this is, again, it's a completely, in my experience, it was a completely innocent thing where there was a breakdown between the county secretary and the drug testers. They have to be notified. You end up moving to a different field and they land to the county grounds, and that's the way it works. In my experience, it's not because we're trying to avoid them or anything sinister like people might try to paint, but I'm just trying to point out the appetite there around this drugs thing and trying to find them, and this is great journalism. And listen, it's great journalism to a point, but it's also waste of time journalism in a sport where, you know, where it's not
to,
there.
To a certain extent, I think that some of that stuff is relatively healthy. You know, putting that out there is probably a good thing, and it can be a little bit embarrassing for the people that make those errors, and hopefully they don't make those errors again.
Yeah,
I mean, exactly. I think one of them it was on a number of occasions, it was the Dublin Hurlers, I think. And, you know, two occasions it was the Carlow Footballers. So, look, these things happen. But I think that, by right, we should all feel a lot more comfortable if those issues are tightened up and we have less of those scenarios occurring.
Yeah, and that's not a dig at the 42. At least they did the Freedom of Information Act and they actually went to find something out. So it's absolutely not, in my opinion, because of the experience I had with those scenarios, there's nothing in that either. Like, I mean, I don't want to keep saying there's nothing in it and going around with blinkers on, because I don't. I just want to wait for something decent to have before let's start talking about this. Quickly, lads, before we start talking about the matches, because we've gone to town on that doping stuff, I want to tell you about a funny GAA rule which has directly affected me. We talk about some prehistoric rules and we talk about some weird rules within the GAA and how, you know, they're just unexplainable. So anyways, my last game with Portlaoise was 2011, and I made my peace with the club this year because a friend of mine was over the intermediates and I was going to play intermediate. Portlaoise have a really strong intermediate team. They lost the semi-final last year, with a late goal, and the team O'Dempsey's beat them and they went on to win it. So you'd imagine Portlaoise should be in the shake up for the Intermediate Championship. So I'm back down living in Portlaoise, cleared everything with Portlaoise that aggro I had with them. So I haven't played with Portlaoise in 6 years.
I'm delighted you admitted you were wrong.
No, I actually didn't admit I was wrong. You'll be absolutely amazed to hear, but I'm not getting into all that nonsense with Portlaoise because that's all water under the bridge now. My issue is that I got a phone call from the Portlaoise intermediate manager who told me that the Laois County Board are not allowing me play intermediate. And I says to him, why is this now? Good Lord. Because the last game you played for Portlaoise was senior and you have to be regraded. So I'm 39 next month. I might not even make this intermediate team. I haven't kicked a ball, an O'Neill's ball, since 2011. And I can't play intermediate. I have to play senior this year and the regrading has to be done before February the 28th. Did you ever hear the likes of that? So 6 years later. So if I was 50, I would have to be regraded to play intermediate level. So I can't play at any level for Portlaoise, only senior, because the last game I played in 2011 was a senior game. Did you ever hear such nonsense in your life as that? Isn't it so frustrating?
Well, that's pure nonsense and it is completely ridiculous, and it's amazing that in those scenarios they can't just give an exemption. They can give an exemption on a lot of things. I'm astonished that they can't just sort that out.
Yeah.
Stupid rule. I can understand the rule to a certain extent, but it just doesn't make much sense because every example is specific that they're going to catch somebody on, but they're going to rule on.
But you could understand a rule if this was 2012, the year after, and I might, because I had a good year for the seniors in 2011, that I might be a bit too strong for the intermediate grade.
But that's rubbish anyway, because there could be any number of reasons why you can't play senior. I mean, you could have work commitments that prohibit your ability to train.
Yeah.
I mean, it actually happened to me where I missed the first round of our club championship with a pulled hamstring and I wasn't allowed to play second team championship, which to me was ridiculous. Like, I mean, I should have been allowed to play the game. I wasn't fit for the first round of championship, therefore I wasn't in the team. I was available for selection for my club. I should be allowed to be picked on any club team that's playing a match. Yeah. That I was eligible for. And, you know, I just don't see the point of it. I mean, no club is going to hold back a load of players from their first team so they can win a second team championship.
No.
It just, the rule is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. And, like, this is what is happening to me currently is that the GEA is prohibiting someone from playing GEA. Like, that's the reality, because I neither have the willingness to commit to the senior team, and I wouldn't probably make the senior team now, even though Portlaoise aren't a strong senior. I don't want to commit to a senior team. I don't have the time for that, because I'd be away at matches and all at the weekends, but I could play intermediate. My friend is over the team. My good friend, Kevin Fitzpatrick, is captain. I want to play intermediate. There's no even guarantee I'll get on the team. I am being prohibited by the Laois County Board from doing that, which is just absent. When you actually break it down like that, that you want participation numbers and you want lads playing, and you have a county board saying you can't play. You're out, mate.
Are you going to appeal one of those four appeal bodies?
I've been on to somebody who's looking into it. I've been on to somebody. Yeah, Joe Brawley actually could. Yeah, just the threat of Joe Brawley maybe landing down there might get me into the mix. But anyways, that's enough. Listen, we'll leave it there, lads, and we'll be back in a second. Have a look at the games.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens, and it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving, and I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show doesn't look great, there was, maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out terrible, unlucky to lose. Like, let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure,
50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name. AIB, backing club and county.
Well, we predicted a big Tyrone win, and we got the big Tyrone win, even though Derry tried to make a game out of it. Just the start of the second half, but like, there was just an air of inevitability about this. It's just Derry aren't at the races. We know Tyrone are a really good counter-attacking team, and we didn't really see anything new from this game whatsoever.
No, we didn't, unfortunately. We're just going to rehash the same old analysis. there was nothing new. There was probably at one stage of the game, I think it was in the 38th minute, it was 11 points to 7, I think, and Enda Lin was coming through and he clipped the ball over the bar when he could have could have put the ball through for a goal. You know, that would have left a point in it, and Derry needed to get a goal to give themselves any chance in the game, and they needed to take pretty much every single scoring opportunity that they got, which they didn't do. They missed a number of they missed a few kind of relatively straightforward chances, and Mark Lynch, when he came on, had a couple of pot shots that were poor enough. Now, he's under a fair bit of pressure, but it was a day where Derry needed all of them to go over to stay in the game. And look, there were a few points down with, you know, it was really only in the last 5 or 10 minutes that Tyrone really put major distance between themselves and Derry, but they always had them at arm's length. They were always in complete control, and Derry will be frustrated because they did a reasonable containment job on Tyrone for large parts of the game. They gave away far too many frees, which is, you know, was really criminal from their perspective, because if you can keep the free count down with the bodies back there, you're going to make it hard for Tyrone. And Tyrone, as we know, you know, aren't fantastic on the attack. So if you block down the space and you don't give them frees, they're going to struggle. So Derry kind of shot themselves in the foot a little bit with that. But look, it was a poor Division 2 team against a decent Division 1 team, and the gap was there to be seen.
Yeah, and even like the Tyrone wides in the first half, Peter Hart, uncharacteristic out of him. Mark Bradley, a few bad wides. Like, I mean, you know, that's definitely an issue with Tyrone, is the accuracy up front. Now, look, I mean, they scored 22 points, but like, they ran out easy enough winners in the end. But like,
but they weren't impressive in terms of creating scoring opportunities. No. Like, I mean, look,
there's legs that won it for them.
Legs that won it.
Absolutely. And the fresh bodies that came in were coming on against a tired Derry team, and who had to push on near the end, who were probably in search of goals, and they got a couple of scores in the counter attack under no pressure. So, I mean, Mickey Hart wouldn't have learned too much about his team. You wouldn't have learned anything about any of those guys that came on, other than the fact that if they're given 20 yards of space, they can kick the ball over the bar from 30 metres out.
Yeah, and there was times in the game when Tyrone did get the turnover and they broke up the field that they looked slick. But like, I mean, there's nothing new about that either. We know they're incredibly slick. They'll commit bodies forward when they turn it over, especially against the weaker teams. They'll commit more forward than they would against Mayo, maybe, or Dublin, because they'd be a bit more cagey.
Yeah, but there were times in the game where I just thought, looking at it, God, if Derry had opened up, Tyrone would have annihilated them.
Yeah.
There were times when there were just Tyrone bodies streaming forward, and only for they were coming up against a kind of a fairly packed Derry defence. Derry had left a lot of bodies at home. If that had been Derry pushing up the field and leaving those gaps, I mean, Tyrone could have run into. And they actually butchered a few
opportunities
in the first half, particularly when they could have probably, if they had worked the ball, say, as effectively as the likes of Donegal would do in those positions. Donegal would have had at least three goals in the first half against Derry on that counter attack, and the game would have been over after 20 minutes, and it would have been a complete cakewalk. Whereas Tyrone still had to trudge away for longer into the game, because they're just not as good as, I suppose, Donegal, who are the best at that counter attack.
That our man Lee Brennan that came on there,
yeah,
Conor,
2 points in 7 months,
and out in front, Sola's off the left, sticks it over off the right. Let's start a campaign for Lee Brennan to start for Tyrone, because I genuinely think Lee Brennan can make a difference between Tyrone being this team that's bloody Groundhog Day Tyrone, which we've talked about before, to Lee Brennan actually creating and scoring and causing some serious problems for defenders, like out in front, he's actually an option for a kick pass and actually can fit a proper finisher.
The problem with Tyrone is that there's only one place available there, and that's Mark Bradley has it. He's the only forward at the moment.
I'd take Brennan over Bradley. If I was playing Bradley, I'd play him at 11, a little industrious kind of centre half forward. I'm not sure he's that out and out corner forward that you need.
But it really frustrated me. I mean, I don't know what Damien Burton thought was going to happen. Did he not foresee that Tyrone were going to play a counter attack in football? It was like the exact same team, the exact same time as last year. Like, you know, he played against them last year, he's seen them all year, and it was almost like they didn't know Tyrone were going to pack the defence and hit them on the break.
I think they did, though, Conan. Like, I mean, this is another thing, and you have Pat Spillane talking about this in the live game. They had no idea how to break down the Tyrone defence. And you see, Dublin have no idea how. Like, okay, Dublin, we've talked about, are a little bit more, you know, sophisticated, as in they'll keep it wide, they'll have two lads standing on the outside, they'll try and work the openings. But there's an awful lot of times the openings don't appear, lads, because Tyrone have 13 or 14 men back in that area. 13, they'll leave one up. So, like, I mean, you tell me a team that is good at breaking Tyrone down. I can't find one. You name me a player on a full forward line that scores consistently against Tyrone, you don't find one. End of story. You don't break Tyrone down easily. When you play Tyrone, you do a Mayo on it or you do a Dublin on it, and you play them at their own game to some extent. The game ends up 11-10. It's not a great game to watch, and that's the only thing way you can do against Tyrone. That's the reality of it. I don't blame Derry for not getting through that. How the hell can you get through?
No, but I'm suppose I'm blaming them for not doing what Mayo did or trying to do it.
I think they tried a bit.
Too many men, and like I know Tyrone, like Keane, you're right, they didn't get through for many goal chances, but they overran them so easily in the middle third, and their scores came much easier.
Yeah, they absolutely overran them in the middle third, and it was always the late runner coming onto the ball. And Tyrone at times in the first half particularly, their movement in the crowded spaces was pretty good. They had reasonable options there. It is very, very difficult to break down a team who just sit with 13 men behind the ball, particularly when they're as good at it as Tyrone.
I don't think you have to be good.
I think you do. There is a difference. Like, there's a lot of teams that get bodies back.
Yeah.
Tyrone have moved it on a level. They're a step ahead of every other team. They have the bodies back in the right zones, and they're pressing the opposition in the right positions.
Yeah, and they're hungry. They've an appetite to fight and work.
And yeah, they're very aggressive tackling, and they gave away a number of cheap frees, but they'll take that because they'll think, look, we'll get more turnovers than we'll give away frees. So they're happy enough probably with that aggressive tackling. And they do it far enough out the field that they're not at risk of kind of pot shots coming from the opposition. But granted, as a Derry supporter, Conan, I'm sure you were disappointed that they knew that this was going to happen. They didn't appear to have... There was a number of occasions in the first half particularly where Derry came forward and they just ran out of ideas. It was very static. I mean, if you're preparing to play against a team like that, you're talking about your support runners coming. But once they go ahead of the ball, if they're not in the play, they need to come back around and recycle their run. That's the only way to do it, because otherwise they're just in there blocking up space themselves anyway. So they needed to do that. They needed to keep it nice and wide, and they needed to prioritise getting certain players onto the ball, particularly the likes of Orion Bell, who didn't really get any opportunity. But if the team was structured in such a way that, right lads, we're on the attack here, we're looking to get Ryan Bell on the loop, a fella who can kick points from distance, then you can manufacture those scenarios. But if you don't go out with that plan, it becomes very much a case of run up against a brick wall. The guy on the ball has no option, doesn't know what to do, dilly dallies, over carries, gets turned over, and you're hit on the counter attack. Whereas I just think that there's so much time and effort talked about defensive systems and defensive plans. You'd seriously have to question whether or not enough work, and look, it clearly isn't, enough work isn't going into what you do in possession and how you create these chances.
Yeah.
Because I just don't get it. Like, you can't win the game by just sticking out a load of bodies to defend.
Yeah, it's difficult. Damian Barton came out after the game and he says, we didn't intend to go up against a blanket defence and start going lateral. And that might be fair enough. But like, I mean, if you don't punch that initial hole, or if that, doesn't work and throw and get back, like, there's no option but to go lateral. And then you have to filter from one side to the other, and hopefully you get an overload. It's almost like Guardiola, where you're trying to create an overload on one side, and that's the reality. He says it's endemic in club football in Derry, this business of keep the ball and manufacture an opening. We didn't get ahead of the ball and we were very static going forward. We didn't get inside that often. So like, I mean, reading that, you'd imagine he understood what he was coming up against. But the next thing is, like, what happens when you're faced with those jerseys, those ravenous Tyrone jerseys who want to tackle you, who want to track your run? Like, there's no Tyrone fellas switch off. What I mean? It's just they have a great culture within their team for hard work, and they're like, they have a great team spirit and they have a great appetite for working. And when you come up against a team like that and add their defensive system to it, Jesus, Tyrone are hard to beat.
But what was the plan? I mean, like, Danny Tallon was in the full forward line, might as well have not been there. They could have used him just for out the field defending. Emmett McGuckin was playing midfield more or less. Like, I don't know what he's taught. Like, it's you're right, it's one thing saying to a player, get at them, run at them, but then it's another thing then when Sean Kavanagh is punching you in your ribs and you're trying to get past them. Like, it's not possible, especially then if you're responsible for losing the ball. And another thing that pissed me off, and it smacked of like Derry having no real plan, they had 5 different free takers yesterday. 5. Like, who's a free taker? I mean, it was just like everyone was just coming, chancing their arm. Like, no real sort of system in place, no plan as to how to score more points than their own.
Yeah,
and that's really frustrating to watch as a fan.
There's no doubt it's frustrating, and I don't know. I watched that game yesterday, and I found myself on Twitter right throughout the game. There was just nothing. There was nothing happening in it, and it was poor. When Henry Shefflin gives the hurling game Dublin and Galway, the ultimate insult we mentioned on the hurling show, is like watching football, he said. Which is just a kick in the arse to all of us poor football men.
Matty Donnelly should have been sent off.
Well, that was an interesting one. But it didn't. In Matty Donnelly's case, I know Oisín McConville, I was reading, was very strong on it. The camera angle I saw was a good bit away from it, and I couldn't definitively say what happened. Chrissy McCaig held his face. But that can often happen as well. Chrissy McCaig plays the bloody game on the edge too. He's hit doing an awful lot of this owl kind of winding up shoving, shoulder and pushing and shoving. And like, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. Like, I mean, the antagoniser should be also punished for stuff like that. And he was antagonising Matty Donnelly.
Shoulders and punches are different.
Look, to be fair, Matty Donnelly gave him a nice schmig. And really, if Chrissy McCaig, you know, most players in that scenario would have hit the deck and stayed down. To be fair to him,
he didn't get him sent off, but Matty could still get suspended for that now.
Yeah, well, look, if there is very clear video footage of him striking him, then he deserves to get a suspension. The camera angle we saw and it was zoomed in, it wasn't fantastic, but to me it looked like he gave him a dig and probably should deserve to get a ban for that. Now, I can understand Matty Donnelly's frustration, but at the same time, that's what these man markers do.
I know, you have to deal with that.
Well, you have to deal. It's very surprising to me that players like Matty Donnelly and Peter Hart aren't just man marked more regularly, because Matty Donnelly didn't have much of an influence in the game. Now, granted, from a Derry perspective, Chrissy McCaig didn't have much of an influence
on the game.
That's the problem.
If you're going to man mark Matty Donnelly, don't use Chrissy McCaig to do it. We saw nothing of the inspirational player Chrissy McCaig is. And, like, I mean, you have to use your inspirational players. You know, I know he did it on Dermot Connolly, but he seemed to be more preoccupied with Donnelly yesterday than
he didn't go forward at all. And look, at maybe he felt usually he would take the initiative and drive forward. So look,
do you know, actually, just to cut, sorry to cut you off on that, is Chrissy McCaig talked to me after that Dermot Connolly incident, right? Wait and hear this. And he said that he was overruled on how to deal with Connolly. He wanted a man mark Connolly. His management team told him to attack Connolly. So Chrissy McCaig's own instinct is to man mark. But they told him to man or to attack Connolly. So without the instruction from management, Chrissy McCaig went back to his default and man marked and lost that whole going forward.
Yeah, that is a very interesting point, because I mean that just displays the mindset of the player, you know, very clearly. So he went out and did exactly what he thought was the right thing to do yesterday on Matty Donnelly. To be fair, for Derry, I think Derry supporters, even his own players, probably would have liked to have seen him drive forward more, because sometimes guys, I suppose, themselves don't realise how inspirational they can be when they do certain things in a game. And look at Chrissy McCaig kicking a point. Even if Matty Donnelly got a point the other end, Chrissy McCaig's point is actually worth more to Derry than the Matty Donnelly point is to Tyrone. And those things have to be taken into account. And look, it was an interesting one. That's very interesting from his mindset.
Yeah, it is. You would think that Dermot Connolly performance would have changed, would have completely said, right, maybe I might be onto something here.
Yeah, I don't think it would have mattered anyway if he got sent off or not. We were snookered either way, and we're going to walk that game no matter what.
Yeah, no, I don't think it would have made any difference. It'll be interesting to see what happens, Matty Donnelly, from here. I don't know. I just don't feel if he hit him, then he probably does. But it just didn't look. Maybe it's because Chrissy McCaig, to his credit, didn't make a meal out of it. If Chrissy McCaig made a meal out of it, we might be sitting here saying Matty deserves a suspension for it.
Yeah, and look, I suppose the thing about it is, over the course of a game,
it's a man's game.
Yeah, over the course of a game, lads can sort out their own debates between themselves on the pitch, and that's the way kind of traditionally you kind of like to see it done. That there's a bit of messing going on, that they sort it out amongst themselves. But you would have to say that Chrissy McCaig didn't, you know, he didn't appear to it any point in time. I didn't see him, striking Donnelly. So look, maybe it's a difficult one, but I'm sure the disciplinary bodies will review it.
Yeah, okay, quickly, Cork lads, we won't spend too much time on this. We talked about Cork a lot last Thursday. We had Billy Morgan on, and Billy Morgan made the point that their manager Padraig Healy was kind of parachuted into the job 2 years ago, that John Cleary was the man for the job at the time. He had an excellent under-21 record. We know the stats of Cork having won 10 of the last 13 under-21s in Munster. They've loads of players there. John Cleary wanted the job. John Cleary wanted conditions and standards that the county board couldn't meet. So the county board went for their man in Padraig Healy. And let's be honest, lads, on the evidence under Padraig Healy, right, they've been relegated out of Division 1 terribly. They've lost to Tipperary for the first time in Dunkey's years. They've only won two games in Division 2 so far this year, and that was to Fermanagh and Derry, who were both relegated. And now they almost have the absolute humiliation of losing to Waterford in the Munster Championship. Padraig Healy clearly to me is not doing a good job with that team. I think they're better than that. There's absolutely no evidence to suggest that Cork don't have the players. The thing, like, it's very obvious that Cork are play second fiddle to the hurling down there. Everybody knows that. And, you know, they have a lot of players from that under 21 team, from those winning under 21 teams. Kieran Sheehan went to Australia. Damien Callahan's gone with the hurling. Even fellas like Shane Kingston and Alan Cadigan, who are really good footballers and won with the under 21s, they're playing hurling as well. And they're meant to be really good footballers. So they have a lot of that to contend with. But lads, in all fairness, like, let's call a spade here. That is a Cork team that's underperforming. They're not being inspired to work. They're not being inspired to play. They don't have a game plan. They couldn't break down Waterford's defensive system. They were clueless. Tomás O'Shea said it was like a herd of sheep just let out in the field. Like, I mean, let's just write Cork off until they can maybe get a new set of management and someone that a Jim McGuinness or someone that can come in and actually raise the standards.
Yeah, it's hard to follow on from that. It was a look at beating Waterford by a point. Looking at it solely from a Cork perspective is very, very poor, and it has been very, very poor for the last number of seasons. Now, in fairness, I do think it stretches beyond just the last two seasons for Cork in terms of their fall from being a top team. They have had sporadic games. Look, they gave Kerry a decent game in Munster 1 year, but that's
2015.
Yeah, that's kind of like, you can't remember anything much over the last really 5 years, maybe, is it? Four or five seasons.
The won the All-Ireland in 2010, they won the league in 11 and 12, and they had some, they lost to Dublin in 11, and then 2012 they lost to that Donegal team where Cork were
in
favourites.
The quarter final,
Cork,
yeah,
were,
I remember,
favourites, semi-final. Cork were favourites,
sorry,
going into that.
That game.
After that, then Cuthbert took over, tried to change the style from a running game to a kicking game, had some great joy initially, and then had a really bad championship. And then they've kind of been on the slide outside, like you said, did a good performance against Mayo in Croke Park in, I think, a quarter final. They had a good performance against Kerry, but they've been sporadic good performances, actually, when their backs were to the wall. But in general, there has been a slide.
There has been a slide, and it's when you point to the success that they've had at underage level between their minors and under 21s. Look, granted, Kerry have taken over a little bit in the last few seasons and Tip were competitive, so in the last 5 years at minor level I don't think they've done a huge amount, but their under 21 record up to about 3 years ago was exceptionally good.
Yeah.
So really Cork should have a huge amount of talent, you know, successful talent from the age of about 23, 24 up to about 30. And it is astonishing because they would really be what you would consider to be the peak years for players. It's astonishing at how drastic their fall has been from I suppose a really competitive team that they had before that. And it's, I'm sure for people down in Cork it must be driving them absolutely mad, particularly when there is a narrative that's been presented there from people that are close to it in Cork that the best man for the job didn't get the job, and subsequently there's been a massive fall off in performance. Like, Cork have to be better than their performances are showing. Now, in these scenarios, you know, it's not always the fault of the management, but you would have to say that it's up to the management to get the performance and to get the players motivated. If the management can't motivate the players to give their best and to deliver performances, then the management really should look at themselves and say, we're not able to get the best out of these players, we need to leave. And that's, you know, that can happen. A guy who's a brilliant manager can work in one club or work in one county and just his approach mightn't suit with the players in another group, and he's not able to get the performances from them. That, you know, managers have to recognise that and move on.
Yeah, it's probably a difficult thing to do.
Pádraig Healy reminded me a little of Claudio Ranieri. Remember when he got sacked and there was this outrage, like, how could he do this to this man? And then he appeared on Monday Night Football and people sort of took a step back and were like, oh, maybe he doesn't really know what he's talking about that much. I mean, just listen to that interview yesterday, I don't know much about Pádraig Healy at all, but just seemed a little bit uninspiring. Like, you know, it doesn't seem like the sort of character that can take over a county like Cork. Big reputation, lots of good players, lots of players that aren't there, and their performance showed it. They didn't look fit, didn't really look organised. It's too many old lads sort of carrying them. It's just, and that sort of stems from the top, I think.
Yeah
well, look, there's always a big difference. I'm always wary of talking about fitness and teams, because there's, you know, oftentimes you look at a game and if a team is playing with a lack of confidence or just they're off the pitch of it in terms of motivation, the fitness levels look poor. Surely to God, Cork have been training long enough that they were fit enough to play 70 minutes against Waterford. I don't buy into the thing that fitness is an issue in most county teams. They're fit enough to play. They just obviously don't have the hunger and it's not working for them at the minute. The dynamic is not right.
Yeah, uninspired and lack of direction, lack of game plan, and that's no confidence now. They're absolutely shot. Right, up next, we'll give performance of the weekend.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken out, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know what I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me. You're looking
out of a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Alright lads, performance of the weekend. Not the easiest weekend. No contenders actually standing head and shoulders above everybody else in what was, we probably didn't see enough of the Clare Limerick game, but by all accounts, you know, Clare had goal chances, Limerick kind of battled back towards the end, but no exact headliners coming out of it, or the highlights that we saw anyways.
Well, we don't want to start that debate on the uncompetitive Ulster Championship again, do we? Well, the competitive Munster Championship, a point between both games yesterday.
Conan might be very lucky that we went to town on the doping there to start, because that might have been in my mind, the whole 42 points cumulative difference between the three games.
If you were expecting anything from Derry Tyrone, then you're the fool here.
Yeah, well it is. Ulster Championship needs a good game, lads. I think down in Armagh can provide it. I think Armagh play a good brand of football. You know, okay, the last few years down have been fairly defensive, but I think Armagh might light up the Ulster Championship. I'm just calling that here, but that's for Thursday's show. Conal McCann, lads, coolest haircut we've seen on the GA field for a long time. So much gel in that hair, it doesn't budge one inch. It's slicked back the whole way through the game. Conal McCann reminds me of a player, lads, and I don't know anything about Conal McCann. I know nothing about him. He's the type of fella that you might have to knock on his door the morning of the match, here, come on, and he might be in two minds whether to go or not. I don't know whether I'll have him down. Yeah, you know that kind of way where he's just being so good at Gaelic football is a bit of a torment to him. Like, he'd rather be playing video games or being doing something else.
Where's the game at?
Yeah, that kind of thing. Now, Conal, we'll try and interview you sometime, because I could be completely painting you in the wrong light. But he was outstanding for his debut, lads. Real composed on the ball, lovely style, languid style. Just a real, you just know immediately this lad's a really, really good player.
Yeah, he was nice on the ball and he took his score as well. His timing coming late into the move is pretty good too.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of generally a sign of a decent player. He was picking up decent positions. Look, he was relatively untested. I don't think he didn't set the world alight in terms of his competitiveness under the high ball in the middle third of the field, but he was reasonable. And for your debut, you know, you'd have to be fairly happy for your championship debut for Tyrone. It was a good solid day's work for him.
Yeah, and coming on late to moves, Conan, obviously Tyrone played the same system right throughout. It's like bloody Barcelona, only Barcelona play a lovely style right throughout. Tyrone played the blanket defence right throughout. But like, he's coming in knowing exactly what his job in midfield is. There's no settling in period. He just knows the way Tyrone play.
And when I mentioned legs earlier, I mean, he's the one that kept popping up. I kept just imagining him just striding through the middle third and just setting up plays and coming late, as you were saying. Kicked a nice score. Pretty average Derry midfield, but he completely exposed him.
Yeah. No, he definitely did. Sean Kavanagh, Conan, I'll give you this one because you're a big Sean Kavanagh fan, like I am. I'm sure, like you are, Keane. Like, he's still going. He's 34. Is he 35 this year? I'm pretty sure he is. Look, very lively. Like, I mean, yeah, got a good point from play. Won a few frees himself. Derry lads now, you know, kind of giving you those handy frees that you were delighted with, especially when they have men back, like Keane mentioned. But he was very lively, and like, you know, I would prefer to see him stay inside all the time. I think when he drifts out, he's in no man's land. He's neither here nor there. I think he needs to just stay in on the edge of the box now that the legs mightn't be what they were. Because when he was in there, he actually caused a little bit of confusion for the first 15 minutes before then he appears in the midfield and is like, Sean, stay in there.
There was only one incident where you thought, oh, actually he is getting a bit older, was when Brendan Rodgers just showed him a clean pair of heels down the wing and he couldn't recover to catch up with him. But apart from that, even coming out of defence, he looked pretty energetic, so powerful still. This is 15 years later. 15 years. Like, he started in 2002 and he's still like leading the way. He played all 70 minutes. Didn't even come off for a break, even though they were hammering Derry. Yeah, he's still as annoying as ever.
Yeah, from a Derry perspective. Look, Kavanagh, it's all been said about Kavanagh on several occasions. He's a legend of Tyrone football, and he's again just continuing to confound the critics and everyone else, because he's just delivering performances, and he's a key player for Tyrone. If Sean Kavanagh wasn't playing for Tyrone, they would be a pale shadow of the team they are, because he's the one player who's able to step outside their prescribed playing pattern and kick a couple of scores. You know, he has that confidence and that ability to do something different when it's needed. And you know, he really on a couple of occasions when Tyrone looked like they were static and going nowhere, he just, you know, come onto the ball at the right angle, and he kicked a couple of lovely scores from distance. And his free taking continues to be very impressive. He's a brilliant striker of the ball from kind of a difficult position, just inside the 45, out kind of near the left hand wing. And he's very, very accurate from there, in a position that Tyrone are struggling for a free taker, and you know, he's given them something different there, and they're going to need him to be at his very best if they're to be in any way competitive later on in the year.
Yeah, okay, lads. And the performance of the weekend goes to Ronan Kennedy for two unbelievable goals and rescue in Leitrim from, you know, what looked like a really sticky situation in Ruislip. So Ronan Kennedy, first goal, dummies inside, sticks it in the top corner. Then the second one, the first one was off the outside of his boot. Second one was a different type of goal where he just side foots it into the far corner. Two brilliant goals. Ronan Kennedy is performer of the weekend. Now, lads, we've just got a statement from Sport Ireland in relation to Brendan O'Sullivan. So we talked about that at the start of the year. So, as Mr. O'Sullivan, a player for the Kerry senior football team, received a period of ineligibility of 21 weeks for testing positive for the stimulant. I'm not even going to try to read this. Methanexamine. Something like that. It's abbreviated to MHA. Mr. O'Sullivan was tested on the 24th of April after playing as a substitute for Kerry in the National League final. That's last year's. He admitted that he had committed an anti-doping rule violation and engaged in a consultation process with Sport Ireland under the anti-doping rules regarding him sanction that was imposed on him. Sport Ireland accepted that it was a contaminated product case, that Mr. O'Sullivan bore no significant fault or negligence, and reduced the applicable sanction to 7 months. Mr. O'Sullivan declined to accept the reduced sanction, and on the 5th of January 2017, the matter was referred to the GEA Anti-Doping Committee. The GEA Committee imposed a period of ineligibility of 6 months on Mr. O'Sullivan following a hearing of the 13th of February 2017. Mr. O'Sullivan subsequently appealed that decision on March the 16th. So here, this is painting a picture of why this has been kept under wraps, because O'Sullivan has been appealing and appealing it. So at this time it went to Irish Sports Anti-Doping Disciplinary Panel, which imposed a period of ineligibility of 21 weeks on Mr. O'Sullivan following the hearing on the 30th of March 2017. Mr. O'Sullivan was provisionally suspended from the 13th of May 2016 to the 28th of July 2016, a period of 11 weeks before provisional suspension was lifted by the disciplinary panel because the violation was likely to have involved a contaminated product. The remaining 10 weeks of ineligibility commenced on the 26th of February 2017, the date of his last participation in the Kerry panel. So I think that's not the end of it. It goes on to talk a little bit more about the makeup of the disciplinary panel. So to me, so this is why this has been kept in the back burner for so long. It's a contaminated product. They clearly specified that. He's been appealing it. He's appealed two or three different. So he's actually appealed it from 7 months to 6 months to 21 weeks. And that's what he got. He ended up getting it down to 21 weeks. So, like, I mean, thank God the instinct on this is all right. There's no cover up. There's no year. What's the, you know, too many questions of why this wasn't. And they actually weren't doing it even to protect the player. They were doing it because he was actually appealing it. And why are you going to announce that he's failed a drugs test when he's actually appealing the fact? And the fact that he kept getting it down off 6 months would lead me to believe, you know, he really felt he was being hard done by here. You know what I mean? So, like, I mean, everything we said at the top of the show, I think we can keep in the podcast. Thank bloody God. Imagine, my heart nearly bloody bursted there when I got a text to say Sports Ireland have released a statement. I'm like, oh no. But we're okay, lads. The podcast stands. We don't have to do it all over again. Right, listen, thank God that's all we have time for. We'll see you on Thursday. We've plenty of games to preview next weekend. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.